like to share these recordings with you.
Welcome back to the Maintainer Podcast, the show where we spotlight the people, projects, and partnerships driving fleet readiness here at Mid-Atlantic Regional Maintenance Center. On today's episode, we'll hear from Captain Dan Heminger as he reflects on his first year as MARMAC's commanding officer. Then, Public Affairs Specialist Harrison Cox sits down with Project Manager Ben Reynolds to discuss the successful completion of USS James E. Williams maintenance availability and the teamwork that helped bring the project across the finish line. Later in the show, Public Affairs Specialist Oscar Pope speaks with DC-3 Prince Opuku about representing the Navy as a member of the All-Navy Men's Soccer Team. In recognition of Mental Health Awareness Month, we'll also hear from MARMAC's mental health counselor, Keziah McNair. Harrison catches up with GSM-1 Kane and GSM-2 Schmitz from MARMAC's gas turbine shop about the work their team performs to support the fleet every day. And finally, Public Affairs Specialist Rebecca Duxler sits down with MARMAC STEM Program Manager Arvind Prasad to talk about STEM volunteer efforts in the community, why STEM impacts all of us whether we realize it or not, and why curiosity might just be the ultimate tool in your toolkit. So stay tuned. You're listening to the Maintainer Podcast. To start us off, I'll pass it over to MARMAC Commanding Officer, Captain Dan Heminger.
Hello and welcome back to the Maintainer Podcast. I'm Captain Dan Heminger, Commanding Officer of MARMAC, the preeminent regional maintenance center in the fleet. It's hard to believe, but I recently hit my one-year anniversary here as your CO. Looking back over these past 12 months, I'm incredibly humbled and proud of everything this command has accomplished. Despite unprecedented challenges while tackling the enduring charge of generating readiness, you rose to the task and performed remarkably. The dedication, the grit, and the sheer pride and ownership you bring to the waterfront each and every single day is what keeps our Navy ready to fight and win. Thank you for an outstanding first year, and I'm looking forward to continuing the mission with each and every one of you. And speaking of what we've tackled recently, we have a massive victory to celebrate on the waterfront. BZ to the entire project team, our industry partners, and the ship's crew on the successful completion of the USS James E. Williams docking modernization availability. Her return from Combat System Sea Trials No. 2 marked the culmination of over 110 weeks and a substantial investment into enhanced combat power and lethality for one of our premier warships. Some firsts that I like to brag about. You all delivered the first Slick 32 Victor 7 installation on the East Coast along with major combat systems upgrades, and you did it with quality and timeliness. We're finishing up some final tests, but I couldn't be prouder of the collective effort and teamwork on this project. You all should be extremely proud of this accomplishment. Well done. Today on the podcast, we're taking you straight to the deck plates. Later in the episode, we have a great interview lined up with some of our outstanding sailors from the gas turbine shop. We're going to hear firsthand about what it takes to keep those engines running and the unique challenges they face, they solve, each and every day to keep our ship's power plants fully operational. But before we dive into that interview, I want to take a moment and highlight some personal excellence outside the skin of the ship. Damage Controlman 3rd Class Prince Opuku, currently assigned to our floating dry dock Dynamic, was recently selected to the All-Navy Soccer Team. DC-3, you are representing MARMAC and the entire Navy at the highest levels of armed forces sport, and we are incredibly proud of you. We've got a tremendous episode for you today, so let's get right to it. This is the Captain, out.
Completing a maintenance availability takes coordination across countless teams, trades, and moving parts. Recently, USS James E. Williams completed its availability, marking another important milestone in supporting fleet readiness. Public Affairs Specialist Harrison Cox spoke with Project Manager Ben Reynolds about the project, the challenges involved, and the teamwork that made it possible.
Okay, hello everyone. I'm here with Mr. Benjamin Reynolds, the project manager of the James E. Williams availability. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thank you. How are you?
I'm good. So just to start us off here, what was the overall scope of the work being done on the James E. Williams during her time at NASSCO Norfolk?
So the James E. Williams is kind of a unique ship. It was going through a DMP 1.5 mod, DDG mod. With that, the big mods there is what everyone's kind of been looking at. Is it's what makes it unique right now on the waterfront is the Slick 32 Victor 7 mod. So they put some big old sponsons on the side of the ship and really makes it stand out in the fleet. So this is the first one we've done on the East Coast. So it's kind of unique. Besides the Slick 32 mod, I mean, there was a ton of other little mods. We completely regutted CIC, did a bunch of repair work. There was wasn't a piece touched on that ship that they didn't repair or fix or modernize. So it was a tremendous amount of work.
I'm sure, yeah. It sounds like it was a huge availability. And just for our listeners, the Slick 32, that's a radar, right?
Yes, it's more like an electronic surveillance type thing. So the Victor 7 mod changes it from electronic surveillance and also adds the electronic attack side of it. So it's kind of a cool with today's threats of drones, missiles, and everything. And, you know, you're seeing it now with shooting down missiles and everything. So this is kind of the Navy's response to how we can shoot them down better, faster, cheaper.
For sure, yeah, and it sounds pretty cool. So, yeah, and that leads us into our next question. With this being such a big avail, were there any challenges that you and your team faced? And if there were, how did you guys solve them?
Yeah, people think that these avails, anyway, they think they're challenging. That's really an understatement. There's not a single day that everything that doesn't seem like it's going wrong.
Right.
So it's really, we talk and communicate every day. We sit at these production meetings. The MARMAC leadership project management team would sit down with the NASSCO project management team at lunch. We'd sit down and have another like kind of get together every day. And so we're constant communication. Well, if we can't do this and that's blocking that, what can we do to make it work? Challenges happen all the time. What makes a really good project team, maintenance team successful is how they deal with those challenges.
I'm sure with an availability this large, it takes a massive effort to complete this. And you were already discussing this a little bit, but how did MARMAC, the team at NASSCO Norfolk, and the ship's crew coordinate daily to keep this project on schedule?
Well, yeah, so we had daily meetings. But that's just once a day, so that's not going to cut it. You can't just have a meeting in the morning and say, okay, I'm going to the golf course and think it's going to be okay.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. I mean, there was group chat, text messages, group. Hey, if there was a problem, say a mechanic for NASSCO, hey, I have a problem. I can't do something because something's not tagged out. He tells his supervisor. His supervisor sending a text message, and within 30 seconds, we're getting people going, oh, I have that for action. I have this for action.
Nice.
We need to talk to so-and-so because this thing's holding it up. Like I said, the communication there is paramount.
Well, yeah, you know, talking about communication and it being paramount and key to, you know, this huge availability, I'm sure there's a specific shop, team, or individual whose hard work deserves a shout-out. Do you have anybody in mind?
Well, I can tell you this. It's not just one person. It never is. It's definitely a team effort, and it's not just a government team versus a NASSCO team versus an AIT installation team. It takes everybody there. But I want to really point out that, you know, since I took over, the bulk of this work was already done, and that was big thanks to Jimmy Gallahan as the project manager then and all the SBSs who worked this ship. They did a fantastic job at pushing this work early and getting it through. I mean, they were able to get this ship, the underwater stuff for undocking early on time. I mean, that's kind of unheard of with these ships. So I would say the MARMAC maintenance team then with the project manager and SBS is a fantastic job. Well done to them. So when I took the ship over in last year, I was really handed a successful project already. I just had to dot the I's and cross the T's. So I would really shout out to those guys for all the hard work They're the ones sitting there on the deck plate every day, up and down the ladders, talking with the crew, talking with the contractors, and making it work.
Huge shout out to them for doing the amazing work that they've done. So as the project manager, what does it mean to you to see this destroyer successfully wrap up her availability and return to the fleet?
Well, I can tell you it really makes me proud to see this ship being able to do successful sea trials and come back and be ready to return to the fleet. I mean, they're about to start basic phase. But it's short-lived. Maintenance on these ships is constant and hard. So, I mean, as soon as the DMP is finishing, we just started a CMAV this week. So wow. It's right back to the grind, right back to work, and right back with the teams communicating. It starts all over. This maintenance on these things is all the time. So, so it's amazing to see the ships that are out there doing the work right now, to know that they had to go through this same kind of stuff, see them go out. And so when they come back, it's going to be James E. Williams' turn to go out. And so all that hard work makes you, it gives you a sense of pride, mm-hmm. Which makes me really, really want to do a good job.
Definitely. And it sounds like, you know, from everything that we talked about, that you guys have a great team, and even good collaboration between NASSCO Norfolk and the ship's crew. So I know that maintenance is constantly ongoing, and it's just a good thing that we have a good team for that. So again, thank you. It's a good thing that we got this ship out to sea.
Well, thanks for having me, and thanks for the hardworking crew and all the help that we've had. Couldn't have done it by ourselves.
For sure. Awesome.
Thanks again to Ben Reynolds for taking the time to speak with us, and congratulations to everyone involved in the successful completion of the availability. It takes an enormous team effort to get a ship back underway and mission ready. For some sailors, representing the Navy goes beyond the deck plates and onto the athletic field. Public affairs specialist Oscar Pope recently sat down with DC-3 Prince Opuku to talk about his experience playing on the All-Navy men's soccer team and what the opportunity has meant to him both professionally and personally. Over to you, Oscar.
All right, first of all, thank you, Prince Opuku, for being here. If you could just briefly introduce yourself, your rank, and your job on Dynamic.
Thank you for having me here. My name is Prince Opuku. I'm originally from Accra, Ghana. I was born and raised. I came here when I was like already old, like 25 years old. So yeah, basically that's it. And then I work under MoMac right now. There's a floating dry dock called AFDL-6. That's where I work as a damage control man. And I'm a third class, DC-3.
Thank you for that. You are doing some amazing things, especially balancing two high-pressure worlds. One, the world of being a sailor on the USS Dynamic and also being part of the All-Navy men's soccer team.
Yeah.
Right. So we'll get into what all that means and what that entails. Mm-hmm. Yep. So let's dive right into it. We all know the Dynamic is the Navy's oldest floating dry dock, built in close to 1944. So what is it like working on a piece of living history every day?
Working on Dynamic, I say it's giving me a lot of experience. I had never seen a dry dock myself. So the day that I went there, I asked my shipmate, how is this going to work? And then they kind of explained it to me, but I didn't really get it. So we did the first docking, and then I understand how everything worked. And then the crew over there really helped a lot. My old captain really assisted me when I first went to the All-Navy. And then this captain, too, is really helpful. He's really a listening man. Anything that I don't understand, I ask my coworkers. It teaches me a lot of stuff. Like, I didn't know how to do line handling. I never did line handling when I was on the ship. There's stuff that I never did on the ship. I get the opportunity to do it whilst I'm at the Dynamic. And working on the oldest dry dock, it's one of the privileges that I like so much. Very happy to be there.
It's a bit intimidating looking at that piece of engineering phenomenon, a floating dry dock. If it's flooded, you look at it and how is this floating?
Yeah.
Right? It's a little confusing to the eye initially. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But you mentioned having the support of your commanding officer, Lieutenant Commander Jeremy Mayfield. That's huge to have that type of support. Right? So let's jump right into the mission. So your unit, the Dynamic, specializes in docking smaller vessels like Landing Craft Unit or LCUs. Can you walk us through a docking evolution and why it's really critical for fleet readiness?
Oh, so Docking Evolutions, it's fun for me. I like it. Before Docking Evolutions, we make our preparations towards the Docking Evolution, which we call the 24th, where we make everything available, things that we need for the evolution, like life jackets, the lines that we will need to put up the LCUs, and everything that we need to run all these pumps, make sure everything is running properly. And then we have someone dedicated as a ship rider who will go be on the ship and then will lead the ship to the place safely. And then when they come, we raise the green flag, which means that they are allowed to come, and then the red flag, which means that you cannot come. So before they come, we have red up, which means no ship or no boat could be allowed to come in there. But when we raise a green flag, it means that we are ready to pick up a ship or a boat. So when they come in, the ship rider give command to our first lieutenant, and then the first lieutenant give command to all of us that the lines that we have to throw first to secure the LCU. So they give us command, and then we follow the command that they give us. And then we make sure that they come in straight. And then once they come in, these divers have to go down there, make sure that it's well situated before we suck the water out. The LCU is supposed to be landing on the blocks that we've built. So it's very awesome. I like it. I like the command very well.
That part is something I didn't know about the divers going.
Yeah, we have divers checking, making sure that all the boats is really sitting on their blocks.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
News to me.
You should come and see one time.
I do frequently, and I'll definitely pay particular attention to the portion where the divers go under to check and make sure the boat's seated on the, I think you call it dunnage.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure it's seated properly there. I will definitely pay attention to that a little more.
You should see it. Absolutely. You love it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
In your own words, why is this a critical part of overall fleet readiness?
In my own words, I say it's very critical because we have to make sure that all these small boats are like well equipped, well fixed, so that in case there is an emergency, or let's say a boat, we need a boat to go rescue people, or it will be ready to go and execute missions. So to me, it's very critical. And then if you don't, the boats are such that if you don't fix it one way or the other, it loses its vulnerability and all that. You know what I'm saying? Sometime will come, it will fall off. So it needs a frequent fixing.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Having that multifaceted usage of the LCU, carrying Marines, like you said, search and rescue, very crucial to mission readiness. Yes. If we don't have even that small component of readiness, things start to fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very integral what you do and very important what you do.
That's very, very important.
Absolutely. We really appreciate that. Let's talk about your shipmates, right? The people that hold you together day in and day out, support you day in and day out. A very small crew at Dynamic. I would assume tight-knit. So how does that small unit camaraderie compare to this team spirit that you also have on the soccer field?
So for my shipmates or my coworkers over there, they're very understanding. If you don't understand anything and you approach them, they're going to explain it to you and then tell you what you're supposed to do. For example, I have a BM1 Rubin. I didn't know anything about it. So basically, what we are doing is a bosun mate's job. I didn't know anything about that, but he guided me, you know, and then teach me everything that I know right now. And then my DC-1, too, she just got there, but she's on top of the game. So you have to learn from your superiors. Anything that you don't ask, you don't understand, you just ask them, and then they give you the teachings or the knowledge that you need to execute the plan.
Right. And then your soccer mates.
So my soccer mates are very good. You know, like when we get on the field, we get in character. Like, it's like you're about to do a movie. So they give you an role and then action. So you just get in character and then execute the plan like I do with my shipmates. So we get in character, we stay together, and we execute the plan.
That's right.
That's it.
Is there anybody that's senior to you on the soccer team who you look to for advice?
Yeah, I have first classes. I have even chiefs, and I have what you call officers, which are our leaders over there. So to give us advices, and then some of them have coaching license and all that. So they teach you what to do on the field.
Thank you for that. And the selection process, like what
so
that entail?
For the selection process, you have to apply, and then it has to be signed by your commanding officer or whoever is in your captain, or if you're on a ship. So you apply, and then if your captain thinks that you can go, because it's not sometimes they are going on a mission or they can't support, maybe if they have less people, they might say that you should hold on for a little bit, or for the next year, maybe we wouldn't have too much stuff to do, so that they will allow you to go. So your commanding officer have to sign, make sure that you are good to go.
And he also has to believe that you're good enough.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, he believes me.
Has Commander Mayfield seen you play?
Yeah, we one time had a soccer game for fun, and he was like, you're really good. And I told him that I was on the team because the old captain that let me go the first time was gone. And then Commander Mayfield saw me, and he was like, you're really good. So he really supports.
Nice. Yeah. It's good to have that support mm-hmm. again. And so as you're traveling around the region, or the country for that matter, mm-hmm. playing these events, you aren't just playing for yourself, right? Mm-hmm. You are indeed an ambassador of the United States Navy wherever you go. And every mm-hmm. time you wear mm-hmm. that jersey, how does wearing that Navy jersey change the way you approach the game compared to just playing casual soccer in the streets?
I mean, it's a great honor. Like, when I was in Ghana, I played in college, I played in high school, I played in middle school. And my parents didn't like the idea that I was playing because they think I should take my books really serious. So once I left there and then I came here, I saw it a great opportunity to play for the Navy. And I don't know how to describe it. It's a great feeling. Navy has a lot of people. So if you are being selected to go play, it means that you have to be happy, right? It's very good. It gives me a lot of enthusiasm to like beat my opponent and all that.
Right. So yeah, I think your parents have a lot to be proud of. Yeah. Not only are you accomplished third-class petty officer in the United States
Sometimes
Navy.
I wish they could show that on TV.
Well, if you're listening, Mom and Dad, he has accomplished an amazing set of milestones in his life. Mm-hmm. The military isn't easy to be a part of. And you also become one of the most renowned soccer players for the United States Navy all-men's soccer team. I know this journey wasn't easy to get to, and you obviously had to start somewhere. If you could give any advice to some up-and-coming soccer players, what would you give them?
I feel like there's so much advantages in the Navy and in the U.S. military that people should like look into it. I knew that this was going on because I kind of grew up in a barracks in Ghana, so I saw them play. So I knew that this was a thing here too. So when I first got on the ship, I was like asking around. Yeah, I had the Navy as a soccer team. Can I go plays? As I was asking, I eventually get somebody to help. So I think like the advice I would give to young people is that they should focus and then get use of the advantages that they have in the Navy. If you get to go play, there are people that play like games for the Navy. Like they play other opponents like Air Force and all that for the Navy. You know what I'm saying? And it's very good. So I would advise the young ones to take the advantage of everything that they have in the Navy. If you got to go to school, go to school. If you got to play, play. If you got to do anything, you do it.
You're definitely a true testament of doing what it takes to get things done.
Yes,
that's an amazing advice for the up-and-coming soccer players, U.S. Navy. Beat Air Force.
Yeah, you're going to beat the Air Force.
Hey, thanks for joining us, Prince.
Thank you very much for having me.
Congrats to DC3 Opuku, and best of luck to him and the All-Navy team this season. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. It's a good time to remember that taking care of ourselves mentally and emotionally is just as important as taking care of ourselves physically. Marmac Mental Health Counselor Keziah McNair stopped by to share a quick message about the importance of prioritizing mental wellness.
Hi, my name is Keziah McNair, and I'm a licensed mental health professional. Here at Marmac, I'm located in Building LF18. I support individuals working through anxiety, depression, and trauma, and I'm really passionate about helping people feel seen and supported. Especially here at Marmac, I think it's important to normalize that stress, pressure, and even emotional struggles are real. And getting the help doesn't make you weak, it actually helps you stay strong. And I look forward to meeting you, seeing you, and just meeting you where you are.
Seeking support is a sign of strength, not weakness. Whether it's reaching out to a friend, speaking with a counselor, or simply checking in on someone you work with, even small actions can make a big difference. Behind many of the Navy's ships and systems are highly skilled technicians working every day to keep critical equipment operating safely and efficiently. Public Affairs Specialist Harrison Cox recently visited Marmac's gas turbine shop to speak with GSM-1 Kane and GSM-2 Schmitz about their work, the challenges of the job, and what keeps their team motivated. Let's listen in.
Okay, hello everyone. My name is Harrison, and I am here with two of our members of the gas turbine shop. How are you guys doing?
Doing fine. How are you doing?
Good.
Doing well.
Yeah, so if you guys can just introduce yourselves for us. and talk about how long you have both been in the Navy.
Hey, how you guys doing? I am GS1 Kane. I'm from Gary, Indiana, home of Michael Jackson, if you don't know where that's at, 15 minutes from Chicago. I've been in the Navy for about 7 years, 7.5 years. It'll be 8 in June.
I'm GS2 Schmitz. Been in the Navy for 11 years, but my military career total is 15.
Right before we were starting the podcast, you were saying that you were previously in the Air Force?
Yes, sir.
That's awesome. That's good stuff. You were saying you were stationed where again?
F.E. Warren Air Force Base in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
So that's definitely a change from there to here, you know, in terms of altitude and everything. So
yes.
Do you think the weather is better here or there?
Absolutely better here.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the shop itself. So can you just give our listeners a broad overview of what the gas turbine shop does for the fleet here at Marmac?
So what the gas turbine shop do for the fleet itself is, so we get jobs sent to us from ships that's on sea duty. It could be rush jobs, jobs that need to be deployment ready. So we get the jobs, go to the ship, fix the engines, gas turbines, or the gas turbine generators. Basically, that's what it is.
And what is the op tempo looking like right now?
Right now, I would say it's steady. It's not slow. It's not fast. But it, usually in the shop, is we'll slow down. Then we'll get a month where we just heavy, like the ship's pulling and we got jobs back to back to back to back.
Wow.
No okay. one's in the shop.
Is the workload like half training, half, you know, like actual work being done for the fleet, or how does that work? So I guess my question is, how do you guys incorporate training into like the everyday?
So training, we could do it two ways. We actually have a trainer where we have an engine up in there and a gas, a GTG. So we could do training that way, or if we got new guys coming to the shop, we had this thing called team leaders. The team leaders actually could do the training while on the job. So that's how the junior guys or the new guys that's coming in the shop actually learn how to do the job.
And how many people would you say are actually in the shop?
Over 40.
Okay. For a typical day for the gas turbine shop, what does that look like?
Typical day, come in for quarters, have our first class meeting. Then we have our in-shop quarters, explaining what we're going to do for the day. Maybe sometimes it's for the week. If we got teams that need to go on jobs, sometimes they even don't even come to quarters because they go straight to the ship to make sure the job get done on time. A lot of admin work, especially for leadership, training too. A lot of training too, lots of training.
And I'm sure with that, there are a lot of challenging aspects of maintaining the engines, which we were saying earlier, they're the LM 2500 engines. Forgive me if I'm wrong. I believe there's four of them on a small boy.
Yeah, on a DDG, it's two in each main space.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So let's talk about like the challenging aspects of maintaining these engines, especially now. You know, in a demanding environment where the fleet is increasing the op tempo, what is that like?
I would say the challenging aspect would be working long hours, like real long hours. Sometimes, you know, you come in before quarters. Quarters could be at 7:30. You got teams that sometimes come in at 6 in the morning, go straight to the ship, then get off maybe around 1700, go home, come back, do the same thing. That would be like the most challenging part. Like guys would be tired, but we know that the ships need to get out to sea so they could be mission ready.
For sure, yeah. So are there any common things that you see that need to be worked on a lot for these engines?
Well, I would say like the most common job that we usually do would be we got H&Js, we got GTBs, 2212, 24s.
What does all that mean in like layman's terms, just for our listeners?
So the GTBs would be gas turbine bulletin. H&Js would be hot and journal. So the hot would be the hot side, which would be the engine. The journal will be the journal side, which is the MRG. So them will be like the most common jobs. But what I mostly see what's going on with the engines, I mean, maybe just cleanliness. It yeah. might be like oil, like every now and then in a module. That's really about it.
Okay, so going back a little bit to the individual aspects of both of your jobs, what is the most rewarding part of your job in the gas turbine shop?
I would say the most rewarding part of the job is just knowing. So before I even say this, as a Navy, the Navy, we work as one. All the rates, even top status. Without us, the ship doesn't function at all. But my opinion, and I'm not just saying it's just being biased. If it's not for the GSMs, the ship's not going to get off the pier.
Right.
You're not going to be able to go nowhere. So the rewarding part for me is just knowing that once we go get the job done, this ship is going to be able to go complete the mission.
Right.
And you actually picking up a skill too, a good skill that you can actually learn and make a lot of money on the civilian side.
Perfect. Yeah. What about you, Jason, too?
For me personally, it's, yes, we can have long hours and we're going to be in the thick of it and we're going to get dirty and get some cuts and scratches on us. But the camaraderie for me, knowing that we did it together as a team, and the friendships and the bonds that you have that can and will carry you for the rest of your life. And then you can both reminisce about the good times and also the bad times and just laugh about it. Because when they say military is a family, it is real.
For sure.
We look out for everybody.
Especially out at sea. I feel like the community out at sea is a lot more closer than at shore. Because out at sea, we're all we got. You know, we don't get to go home to our family. We are a family, you know?
That actually leads us to a really good question, which is, how does the gas turbine shop interact with the other shops at Marmac? And what's that like?
So when it comes to other shops, you know, with being in the military, we do get along, but you also give each other a hard time as well. But when push comes to shove, we actually do work together hand in hand. And if we need something from like the diesel shop, we'd be like, hey, could you please help us do this? Or if the electric shop says, hey, could you come down because we're working on this part of the engine, but we don't quite understand it, don't know exactly how to take it apart so we can do our job. Could you please help us? So we all work hand in hand together.
That's perfect. I think there's definitely a healthy part of competition, especially between shops, but also knowing it's that mentality of the one team, one fight that gets those ships back out to sea for the fleet. So GSM-1 Kane and GSM-2 Schmitz, thank you again for coming in and having this interview with me. I really appreciated it, and I enjoyed it.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, guys.
Big thanks to GSM-1 Kane and GSM-2 Schmitz for giving us a closer look into the work their shop performs day in and day out to support our mission. Science, technology, engineering, and math play a role in nearly everything we do across the maintenance and engineering community. But STEM also extends far beyond the workplace and into our communities, classrooms, and everyday life. Public Affairs Specialist Rebecca Duxler sat down with Marmac STEM Program Manager Arvind Prasad to discuss his STEM outreach efforts, volunteer opportunities, and the importance of inspiring future generations.
Today, we are here with Arvind Prasad. He is in charge of the STEM program at Marmac. So can you kindly share with us your background in terms of like where you're from, how you grew up, and even your life before you joined the Navy in Marmac?
Yep, I was born in a place called British Guiana, the only English-speaking country in South America. Immigrated to the United States over 40 years ago. However, when I was 16, I got a scholarship from the British government to study diesel engineering or diesel mechanics at the age of 16 until the age of 18. I did that. And when I came to the States, I wanted to go to school. But my motivation to go to a formal school wasn't there. So I looked at the Navy. I was going through a magazine. I saw the guys in their uniform, and I'm like, man, that looks cool. So I talked to a friend of mine. He took me to the recruiting office, and I took the test. I was the only person to ace that test in New York in 1989. And right after that, I joined the Navy, and I have no regrets. I think it was one of the best decisions I've ever made.
How long were you in the Navy for?
20 plus years.
Oh, wow.
I retired in 2011. I was offered a job, and I took the job, and here we are.
What motivates you to continue volunteering for STEM, and how long have you been doing this for?
I've been doing STEM for over 15 years, but as a volunteer with Marmac, 16 years. Yeah, over 16 years.
Oh, wow, that's a long time. You probably enjoy it a lot if you're doing it for that long.
Yes, when you like doing something, it becomes easier, and the motivation is already there when you see the kids prosper from STEM projects and STEM events.
And then what efforts in and out of Marmac have led you to help with the STEM outreach?
In Marmac, I believe when we get our volunteers to volunteer to do STEM, it gives them a sense of purpose. And that sense of purpose makes them better people, make them think differently. give them a purpose where they are valued as a person and valued at doing something that can help others, especially the kids. Outside of Mormac, we do reach a lot of communities that demand, I use the word demand, not request, that we show up at their events. So Mormac has a very good reputation with their STEM program outside of Mormac itself.
Aw, that's pretty awesome. And then have you always worked with children, or was this just a recent endeavor from working with the STEM program?
As a parent, you always work with children for the rest of your life. My daughter started robotics, first Lego, and that's how I got hooked on it, because I saw the benefits. What a gift to the kids. It helps them to think. It helps them to be leaders and also help them to think for themselves.
Do you do more with STEM than just the robotics program, or is that like the main endeavor you have?
We do STEM. That's the key part. However, when we're slow on STEM, we assist a family to run a food pantry. Everybody needs to eat. You know, it's cheaper to get food from a pantry than to go spend money and get it.
I'm glad you guys have some community outreach there. How does your work with STEM align and help with Mormac's mission?
Whatever we do in STEM, Mormac and the Navy uses in everyday life. Science, technology, and engineering is getting to a point where it might take our jobs, but you still need people to run those programs. And not everybody wants to go to college or can afford college. So with doing STEM, you can basically let the kids say, oh my God, I didn't know I can do this, because there are always hidden talents with these kids. All you have to do is open up that door, give it a little crack, and then they will go right through.
Aw, that's pretty cool. Did your Navy experience help you with STEM, and how does it align with your personal values of doing STEM, helping you grow as a person?
That's a tough question, because I can't give you an honest answer.
It's
because
okay.
There's no proper answer for that. Everything we do in the Navy and we do in STEM affect our lives. Even as a civilian, not being in the Navy, we do STEM every day, especially when you go home. You open your door, you make sure it works right. You turn on the lights. All that is part of STEM. That's part of technology. You know, you troubleshoot at home. That's part of STEM too. So it affects us in both lives, military and civilian.
I see. And then is engineering your main job at Mormac, or do you do something else?
Engineering is my main job. I work in planning and research. I'm a mechanical engineer tech. I write procedures, all engineering procedures for all engineering equipment.
Oh, wow. That sounds amazing. That would be awesome to actually learn how to do that. Can you kindly describe a time where students were having issues getting their robot or whatever to work? And then how did you help the students overcome their apprehensions or help their light bulb go off?
Okay, well, when we have a robotic program, FIRST Robotics releases the criteria and what the problem is, as in what the robot's supposed to be doing for that competition. So the kids will now brainstorm. Every kid takes part, they brainstorm. We know most of the kids are high school kids between the age of 12 to 17 or 18 or 16, depends on the group they're in. And they have all the ideas, and we come in where once they can think about it, we don't per se physically do it, but we would make suggestions. For example, the robot is supposed to shoot, pick up some balls from the floor and shoot it 5 feet in the air into a basket. They know what it has to do. They would write the program, but mechanically, they can't figure it out. So that's when we step in and said, we would suggest, why don't we try this? And eventually robotics is, you build it, you try it, you dismantle it, you build it, you try it, and dismantle it. It's something is ongoing till the last day for the competition. And with their light bulbs going off, once they overcome that initial fear of what they're doing, they're like, oh my God, I didn't know I can do this. Once that fear goes away, they're unstoppable.
What do the robots do and how are they programmed? That sounds pretty interesting. I've never made a robot like that before.
There are different programming that we can use as per rules. For FIRST Lego, they use block programming. For FTC, FRC, they can use Python. And the kids, they're amazing. They're the one that write the program.
Oh, wow.
For the robots.
I didn't even realize robots were programmed in Python like that. I know Python is becoming more of a widely used language, but that's pretty cool. And then I know you've definitely inspired a lot of kids, and I saw that you received a thank you note from one of the parents from the students that you've been working with. How does giving back to the community make you feel really good? And what's the most rewarding aspect of volunteering for STEM?
Me giving back to the community, I think once you have knowledge, you should share it. It's not something that we should keep to ourselves. So my way of giving back to the community is sharing what I know, what I have up here, before it fades away. The kids, they are the most awesome group of people once they set their mind to do something. You know, giving back to the community, it's, I think we all should give back to the community at some point in time, because at one point in time, we got help from the community without realizing what help we got.
I feel that. And then have you done any other volunteer outreach besides STEM? And have you been volunteering in general for a while?
Yes. Volunteering is my social life.
I feel that.
I also volunteer for the American Legion in Norfolk. I volunteer for Buffalo Family and Friends. I just got certified to do first aid for kids with mental disorder or drug abuse. I did a class. I got certified. I'm also part of CASA. Court-appointed special advocate for children, and I was sworn in by the city of Portsmouth Juvenile Court.
Oh, wow. That is super amazing. And I'm sure a lot of people appreciate all your help, and hopefully you do get appreciated. But if not, I'm glad you do it out of the kindness of your heart, of course. When you eventually end up passing the torch to somebody when your time is done and you want to go do something else or go live on your merry way in retirement, how will you be able to pass the torch to somebody, and what legacy do you want to leave with volunteering for STEM and Marmac and help the next person be able to try to fill your shoes at the very least?
Before I get into the answer to that question, when you do STEM, there's no I in STEM. It's a team. With all the volunteers, we can't get it done. However, passing on the torch, I tried to do it many a times, and I'm like, nah, I'm going to keep going, because what else is there to do? You know, I want to retire. I've set a date next year. However, my wife is like, you sure? Remember you said that every year 3 years ago? And I have to do something. And for me to sit and do nothing, even when I retire and go on my merry old way, I will still be doing STEM, because I've been approached by many schools to go be their coach for their robotics team. I was approached by a school in Panama City, Florida, when we were at the Office of Naval Research Training, to go down there and help them start their STEM outreach program.
Oh, wow, that's incredible.
So STEM is something is going to be going on and on and on with the limited funding we have, but we make it work.
That's awesome. Do you have any other hobbies you're interested in?
Oh, I got a lot of hobbies. I collect watches. I collect Hot Wheel cars. I got over 5,000 unopened Hot Wheel cars.
That's funny. Well, do you have any lasting remarks you'd like to leave with us before we go?
Yes, I think we need to get more volunteers coming out of Mormac. I know we have military at our disposal. However, I think a lot of civilians need to get involved as much as is a non-paying job. They can help society and communities when they share the knowledge with these kids, showing them that everybody cares. And I would like to tell people out there that nothing is impossible. When I came to the States, I had 17 cents in my pocket. And I still have that 17 cents. It's not the same coin, but I still have that. And if you set your mind to something, it will work. It's not about the job. It's about the people in the job. And if you put your mind to something and respect that job, it will do wonders for you.
Thank you so much, Arvin, for your dedications and contributions to Marmac and for STEM. I'm pretty sure everybody dearly appreciates you. So thank you again for everything you do. And thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Thanks again to Arvin Prasad for joining us and for helping inspire future innovators through STEM outreach and education. Marmac's STEM program is truly lucky to have you. That is a wrap on another episode of the Maintainer Podcast. Thanks for joining us as we highlighted the people and teams making a difference across Marmac, from maintenance milestones and fleet support to athletics and outreach. As always, thank you to our sailors, civilians, and teammates across the command for the work you do every day in support of the fleet, the mission, and one another. Let's hand it over to a few of our shipmates to help close us out.
Hi, everyone. This is MM2 Diaz.
This is GSM1 Macmillan.
This is Chief Blanks.
The Maintainer Podcast is produced by the Marmac Public Affairs Office.
Follow us on Facebook and LinkedIn by searching Mid-Atlantic Regional Maintenance Center.
You can also check out the MARMAC news and event page on SharePoint to stay current with everything happening around the command.
Now, if you have any ideas for future episodes,
or if your team is doing something that the command needs to hear about,
drop us a line at Public Affairs. We'd love to hear from you.
We love to hear from you.
Thanks for listening. Until next time, fair winds and following seas. I'm Jared Patch, and this has been the Maintainer Podcast.
The end.